Hi, it's great to have your company. My name's Simon Smart. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We're talking about church. Last time we mentioned that on any given Sunday, around 90% of us are at the beach or down the park, gone fishing, still under the doona, but not in church. What sort of future does the church have in this country? Does it still have something to contribute to our society? Can it still connect with where people are at? Well, joining me again this week to discuss these issues is Mike Frost. Mike's an author and evangelist. He's the vice principal of Morling College in Sydney and the founder of Small Boat Big Sea, which is a missional community-based gathering in Manly on Sydney's northern beaches. He's done a lot of thinking and writing about what it means to be the church in a postmodern era. Joining Michael is Mick Martin, who's a regular on Life and Faith and is the senior pastor at the Upper Room, which is a church community in North Sydney. Good to have you both in again.
Good to be back, Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
Mike Frost, you're strong on the idea that churches make a mistake when they think that if they just get their parking and their music and their preaching and their creche worked out, that people will, you know, naturally flood in the door. It'll be attractive. What's the alternative to that way of thinking?
Well, the alternative, if you can't attract people to church, it would be then, I presume, for church to go to people.
Mm, what does that mean?
Well, for me, that means, well, what would it look like if a community of faith, a church, a bunch of people who've oriented their life collectively around Jesus, what would it look like if rather than turning themselves inside out, trying to kind of market their gathering and get people to come to it, what would it look like if they actually moved out into a neighborhood and asked what would his reign look like if it was enfleshed or embodied in this neighborhood under the noses of those who've not yet acknowledged it or seen it or even know anything about it. And those values would be things like justice and love and mercy and kindness and goodness and beauty and so on and so forth. And so for me, the alternative would be to pour more energy into sending a community out to serve and to give and to love and to announce what it is that they believe, and less energy on trying desperately to find out what kind of equation they can put into place to attract more people to come to their Sunday meeting.
Your sense is that a lot of that is wasted energy, or it could be directed in ways that are more productive, right?
Yeah, because I don't think that the average guy down the street could care less what you do in church on Sunday. I don't think he cares whether your songs are ancient or modern or contemporary, or you have bands or pop music, or he doesn't care. He doesn't care if you have pews or plastic seating, or he doesn't care one little bit. So it doesn't matter how much energy you put into trying to get that formula.
That isn't
right.
The thing that's preventing him from coming.
Right. My thing is, if that's what you like as Christians, like, knock yourselves out. Like, just do what you think enriches your sense of community and your worship and relationship with God when you gather. Spend more time and energy trying to work out what would it look like for us to embody God's kingdom in the place in which he's put us.
Now, both of you are involved in running Christian communities that look fairly different to established models of church. But Mick Martin, what does the role of tradition and history play in a place like the Upper Room?
Yeah, we like to see ourselves as part of a continuing story, you know, part of a tradition. We have a history that goes all the way back to, you know, the early pages of Genesis, really. But to not despise the traditions in the past just because things seem a little old-fashioned or outmoded, that there can still be a richness in traditional expressions and practices. In fact, there's a bit of a movement these days to recapture some of what was known as the ancient practices, you know, the terms like the ancient future church. And there are churches that are trying to recapture some of what they feel is the lost richness of Christian tradition.
Taking hold of what you see is really helpful traditions and reworking them in the shape that...
Yeah, well, I also,
context.
You know, I guess I'm idealistic enough to believe that notwithstanding all the dark episodes in the history of the church, and there have been some, we don't try and hide from that, but that God's hand has been on the church through the ages, and that, you know, even something like the Reformation was evidence that God doesn't allow things to go on for too long before he steps in and
shakes it up a bit.
Yeah, just brings things back on track a little bit. But by the same token, you know, there are those who would see the Reformation as some kind of full stop. You know, that's where we got everything right. We can put all that to bed now. But I think we're still on a journey with God through history, and we need to be engaged in present realities, and we need to be constantly reshaping our theology. We need to be reshaping our understanding of what it means to be God's people in the world in relation to the world we find ourselves in, you know. So,
Without changing the key fundamental aspects of the core of the faith.
Yeah, so it's not tradition for the sake of tradition, as though tradition has some kind of intrinsic value that needs to be preserved at all costs, but it's recognizing the hand of God through history and recognizing that there is some stuff in the traditions of the church that, you know, we do well to hang on to.
We're standing outside St Andrew's Cathedral. Have you been inside the church?
No, I haven't been inside this one. I come here every week, but I never go inside there. Sometimes I might go inside St Mary's Cathedral, going past. But
What is it about that place that you like to, like, why do you go in?
Well, because it's in the middle of the city, and sometimes it's just a pause in the middle of going on to somewhere else in the city.
I think it's definitely relevant because it never lost its meaning to the people, and if they have to go to church, it's okay. Why shouldn't they? I mean, I have no problem with that.
Well, you're not a churchgoer yourself, but what would actually make church appealing to you?
I don't think anything would make church appealing to me because I don't think it's necessary to go in the building to believe in something. So, yeah.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity.
For the most part, the average Christian, I think, is more concerned about what it means for them to live and behave Christianly as an artist or a businessman or a school teacher or a nurse or a doctor, as a husband or a wife or a parent. My concern is that churches ought to be also particularly interested in equipping and helping people to live Christianly in that sense. I don't just mean don't cheat on your income tax and try and tell everyone that you love Jesus every chance you get. I mean, what does it mean for me as a nurse who's committed to bringing healing in the world to see that through the prism of my faith in Jesus? Or what does it mean for me as a filmmaker who's seeking to tell story to see that through the prism of being Christian? One of the things we do in our church, every Sunday, people are on a roster for this, but they come to the front of our meeting and they just share what a typical week in their life looks like. I'm a doctor, I do this, I'm a teacher, I do that, I'm a lawyer. They just describe a typical week. I'm a dad, I'm a father, I'm a this. It'll take them 7 minutes, maybe 5 minutes. Here's what my typical life looks like. And then the congregation calls out ways that they see that person's life mirroring the work of God in this world. And then after we've done that, we lay hands on them and commission them. We ordain them to go out into the legal firm or the hospital or the school or wherever it is that they work and live and to mirror God's work in that world. Now, when we were renegotiating what our Sunday liturgy would look like, I questioned, should we keep doing that? Because we've been doing it for a while now. And there was this outrage within the congregation. You can't drop that. I'm a minister. I'm an ordained Baptist minister. I assume every day of my life I was sent by God or commissioned by God to do what I do. And I take that for granted. And when I saw the outrage in the congregation about even thinking that we would drop that segment of what we do, I realized this is the only time these people get reminded. Mm. It is a perfectly legitimate calling in your life to be a young husband and father and lawyer working in this firm, doing these things and committed to these values of Jesus, and to actually lay hands and ordain that person, commission them, even if it only happens to them once a year, is incredibly rich. And I don't know why churches don't cotton on to this more.
The Center for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
Now, Mike Frost, you've written that people today are searching for relational communities that offer belonging, empowerment, and redemption. Now, you can get at least two of those from the Surf Lifesaving Club, can't you? What's different about coming along to a community like, say, yours or Mick's?
You turn up to your local branch meeting of the Labor Party or your local precinct meeting of your local council. I mean, there's hardly anyone goes to them. Mm. So the sense of connection around purpose, I think, has a very low priority, it seems, in our culture generally. But you're quite right if what I detect behind the question is, well, what other than a sense of gathering and a common purpose does church offer? And it is that redemptive dimension, absolutely. It is about a sense of connection to God as Savior and as friend. It's about acknowledging that we as human beings can't seem to find our way out of the human predicament individually, but collectively, nationally, globally. It doesn't take much to kind of demonstrate that. But that actual connection with God, forgiveness, redemption, freedom, new life, freedom from guilt, opportunity to demonstrate grace to each other because we've experienced it from God, those are truly rich and beautiful experiences that, as you rightly say, the local surf club can't offer. The only problem is, I think, that for many people, they will go to church, and while those things are there, they don't seem particularly visible. Mm. So you sit at the back of a church, and it seems a very passive kind of gathering. And depending on how interesting whatever happening on the platform is, you may or may not detect some of the richness and beauty of grace and forgiveness and freedom and joy and new life and community and purpose. I'm not saying it's not there, but my concern would be that in terms of the Sunday gathering being, I guess, the window to Christian community, it ought to be more apparent that those things are central to the following of Jesus.
Or yeah. Stop treating the Sunday gathering as the shop front and see it as being actually more about giving believers the impetus that they need to be the church when they're not gathered in one place.
For more Christian perspective on contemporary life, publicchristianity.org.
But I wonder if each of you could give me an example of where you've had moments where, you know, the church has got it right and you think it's been what it's supposed to be and it's had a positive impact. Mick?
I guess speaking for our own community, we've developed a relationship with an Australian couple who are based in the Philippines in a slum area called Baseco, which is just a hideous place to live. It's one of the most densely populated slums in Southeast Asia. And we've got this ongoing and developing connection with them where it started off as we heard about them, heard the work they were doing and thought we'd raise some money. So we ran a stall at the local markets here and raised some money for that. And then they were out here and we had them come and share with us about what they were doing. And we've kind of, it's become more of a relationship now than just some kind of transactional thing. But, you know, we're at the point now where we've got a bunch of people who are looking to go over there next year and roll up their sleeves and, you know, get their hands dirty and do some work there. And just what's great about that is, not just the obvious, you know, the kind of helping people in the developing world, but the transformative effect that exposure to what they're doing over there is having on people here, you know, who are starting to question the values by which they live and materialism and so on. And the opportunity for God to work through that, not just for the benefit of the people in Manila there, but for to have a transformational effect on our own lives as well. So that's one example.
Mm. Mike?
Yeah, well, our church is in Manly, and it had the highest incidence of alcohol-related violence in the whole of the state. Every Friday and Saturday night, it's like a war zone. It's like New Year's Eve every weekend, and particularly in the kind of pedestrian mall area, the Corso. And so our council was spending over $1 million a year of our rates trying to curb alcohol-related violence to no effect whatsoever over a five-year period. And member of the council talked to us about, well, do you churches have any ideas?
Anything I just, to offer here?
Well, I just thought it was just magnificent. I thought, I mean, it did come as a last resort, but maybe you people who talk about love and grace and service, maybe you could contribute something. And we developed a thing called Street Pastors, and so we now put on the streets of the Corso, Manly Beach, Manly Wharfront, teams of volunteers called Street Passers, big T-shirts with those words across the front. And it's not a vigilante group. It's not a law and order thing. The mandate is to listen, help, and care. And so you walk people to the taxi rank if they can't get there. You pick up litter. You don't break up fights, but your calming influence hopefully has some effect on the culture of the place. And it's only manned, as it were, by Christian people from churches around the place. Our church, about a third of our congregation have signed up. They go out from 11 p.m. till 4 a.m. every Saturday night, or that's Sunday morning really, isn't it? And alcohol-related violence has dropped by a third since we started doing that. So, you know, it was the last resort. Maybe you Christian love people have got something to offer, and, you know, damn straight we've got something to offer. I mean, who else is going to go out between midnight and 3 a.m. and listen, help, and care in the middle of winter, the middle of summer, you name it. And so in that regard, I think, you know, we're saying to our community, hey, church isn't just about coming to a meeting on Sunday. This is what church is about. This is about listening, helping, caring. And someone said to me, well, is it evangelistic? And we say, no, our policy is, you know, this is not an evangelistic enterprise. So we're not preaching at people or trying to kowtow people to come to church. But you ask any of the street pastors in Manly, not a Saturday night goes by when someone doesn't say to them, hey, why does the church hate gay people? Or, hey, you know, my dad got abused by his priest when he was a kid. Or, hey, what do you think about this or that? People are, we talked about earlier, spiritually hungry, And even though they've had a bit to drink and they're having a bit of sport with the street pastors, those kind of deepest yearnings and longings do come out under those conditions. So I think that's a great example of what churching, as it were, really looks like in a particular neighbourhood.
Well, that's the show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed our series on the church and its future. Join me next time when my guest will be economics writer Ross Gittins. I'll see you then.